information and commentary, often trying into significant dates on your lunar or solar calendars. It's a moment of reflection you'll carry with you throughout the day. Next, tune in for another captivating segment from our very own Iran Radio's productions. Following that, it's time for Let's Recite the Quran. This program draws you closer to the Holy Book, guiding you through eloquent recitation at level 2, where explore tajweed points through a compare and match method, applying them to the beautiful verses of the final surahs of the Holy Quran. Today's special will be back later, so stick around.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today.
In the name of Allah, dear brother and sister, salam. You're listening to today's special from IRIB English Radio, and in this episode, we're going to speak about the impact of social media on human interactions. But first, as the ritual of this program, we'll look at the calendar. What date is today? Today is Saturday, 8th of Jamadi al-Thani, 1447 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 8th of the month of Azar, 1404 of the solar calendar, and the 29th of November, 2025 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. So this is verse 11 of chapter Al-Mujadila. And as you know, in every episode of today's special, we listen to one or two verses of the Holy Quran, and then we focus on the meaning and the important point of that verse or verses. So again, chapter Al-Mujadila, verse 11 for today.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. يا أيها الذين آمنوا إذا قيل لكم تفسحوا في المجالس فافسحوا يفسح الله لكم وإذا قيل انشزوا فانشزوا يرفع الله الذين آمنوا منكم والذين أوتوا العلم درجات وَاللَّهُ بِمَا تَعْمَلُونَ خَبِيرٌ
O you who have believed, when you are told, space yourselves in assemblies, then make space, Allah will make space for you. And when you are told, arise, then arise, Allah will raise those who have believed among you, and those who were given knowledge by degrees. And Allah is acquainted with what you do.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
ما لنا رب سوى
The blessed verse is saying that if believers act upon the same, we'll grant you spacious abodes in paradise and better provisions, sustenance, and a nobler heart in this world. It is worthy of note that many a delicacy of moral questions and social life of Muslims are treated in the Holy Quran, which is the constitutional law of Muslims, where such delicate points are also mentioned amongst fundamental injunctions, such that Muslims bear in mind that following general rules is sufficient for them. Those who act upon such precepts will be rewarded by Allah Almighty in this world. The topic of this episode of today's special is the impact of social media on human interactions. Social media has had an astounding effect on human interaction in both a positive and negative light. This effect has grown exponentially with the rapid development of new technologies and communication platforms. It's clear to see that the way people communicate in these modern times is changing on a daily basis. The development of these technologies has given birth to concerns that time spent on social media platforms is taking away from face-to-face communication, and this is known as social displacement.
It's no secret that social media has changed the way we interact with each other, but just how much has it changed our communication styles? Let's find out. First, let's talk about the sheer amount of time we spend on social media. According to a recent study, the average person spends about 2 hours and 24 minutes per day on social media platforms. That's over 16 hours per week and nearly 35 days per year. As a result, many of us have become more comfortable with communicating online than in person. One of the most significant ways social media has changed communication is the rise of abbreviations and acronyms. It's become common to use shorthand such as LOL, Laugh Out Loud, and BRB, Be Right Back, in online conversations. These abbreviations have also leaked into our in-person conversations, with many people using them without even realizing it. Another way social media has impacted communication is by changing the way we express emotions. In the past, we relied on verbal cues and facial expressions to communicate how we were feeling. However, with the rise of emojis, we now have an entire library of symbols to convey our emotions through text. In fact, over 5 billion emojis are sent every day on Facebook Messenger alone. Social media has also given rise to a new phenomenon called ghosting. This is when someone suddenly stops responding to messages or calls, leaving the other person in the dark about what's going on. According to a study, 25% of adults have ghosted someone, with 20% admitting to doing it because they were too anxious to have a difficult conversation.
Special topics for a special program. You can listen today, now and here, IRIB English Radio. Today's special.
In discussion on online interactions, we focus on neurobiological effects. As debates continue over social media's benefits and risks, researchers are delving deeper into the neurobiological and psychological effects of online interactions. One challenge is assessing social media's impact is its rapid evolution, which complicates efforts to conduct long-term studies that link digital use to specific cognitive or behavioral changes. While some experts argue that digital technologies are fundamentally rewriting children's brain and contributing to a mental health crisis, others contend that the evidence for such claims remains inconclusive. Now that our discussion is about social media, let's look at do's and don'ts of social media. Do keep your private. So you've been hitting the gym, you're looking great, and you're tempted to show off your body in a private pic to a mate. But would you be okay if the picture fell into the wrong hands? While your motives might be innocent, once your picture is out there, it could be tricky to get it back. Even over private message or Snapchat, posts can be saved, kept, and shared forever. So put your camera down and save it for the physical world. The other point, engaging in social skill-building activities. Participating in activities that require real-time social interaction can help you maintain and improve your social skills. Group sports, volunteer work, social clubs, and community events are all excellent opportunities to practice communication, teamwork, and empathy in a real-world setting.
While social media has made communication more convenient, it's also had some negative effects. One of these is the rise of cyberbullying. In fact, nearly 34% of students have experienced cyberbullying at some point, with 16% of those cases being severe. Cyberbullying can have serious consequences on a person's mental health and well-being. Another downside of social media is the echo chamber effect. This is when people surround themselves with like-minded individuals and consume content that reinforces their existing beliefs. This can lead to a lack of exposure to opposing viewpoints, which can hinder healthy debate and dialogue. But it's not all negative. Social media has also opened up a world of opportunities for communication and collaboration. For example, businesses can now easily connect with customers and get real-time feedback. Additionally, social media has been instrumental in organizing and spreading awareness about social justice movements. Lastly, social media has also impacted the way we consume news and information. With the rise of fake news and clickbait headlines, it's more important than ever to be critical of the information we see online. According to a study, 64% of adults believe that fake news is causing confusion about basic facts and current events. There you have it, a deep dive into how social media has changed the way we communicate. While there are certainly negative aspects to it, there are also many positive effects. It's up to us to be responsible and mindful of how we use social media in our daily lives.
That was a very essential and interesting topic. So inshallah, we'll continue during these days. Tomorrow, be with us with the same topic. Thank you for listening. That was today's special from IRIB English Radio. And till then, fi amanillah.
signs you put in my way. I walked every day further and further away from you. Ooh, Allah, you brought me home. I thank you with every breath I take.
You can talk it down, turn the other way. Fear the truth, but it won't go away. Can you hear it calling? Yeah. You can write it down, but nobody cares. It's an untold story of our biggest fears. It can reach you with no warning. Yeah, yeah. When the sun goes down and there's nothing left around, can you feel it? Can you feel it? When your knees are on the ground, you may feel but it's allowed. Are you listening? 'Cause I need forgiving. There's a part of me that won't understand, having sleepless nights with my head in my hands. I'm here and tears are falling, yeah. If I could right the wrongs, would you lend me your hand? I would make a difference to this beautiful land. If I'm nothing, I have my intention. When the sun goes down and there's nothing left around, can you feel it? Can you feel it? When your knees are on the ground, you may fear but it's allowed. Are you listening? 'Cause I need forgiving. I need forgiving.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Yearning for your cure, this humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You are listening to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear brothers and sisters, salam. And welcome to this episode of the Hadith of the Day. So, we begin with a profound saying of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his holy progeny. A nation will never be sanctified if the rights of the weak are not taken from the strong without hesitation. So, if you cannot talk in front of the stronger positions, like those who are stronger in this, in their status in the society, to gain or to actually attain your rights, so that's not a good society you're living in. This hadith is not just about personal morality, but about the very foundation of justice in society. Think of a community where the poor, the orphan, or the marginalized cannot claim their rights because they fear the powerful. That society may appear developed, but spiritually it is weak. The Prophet reminds us that real greatness is not measured by wealth or armies or skyscrapers. It's measured by whether justice is accessible to everyone, anyone and everyone, especially the weakest. History shows us this truth. The downfall of many empires was not poverty or lack of knowledge, but corruption, injustice, and ignoring the oppressed. When power protects privilege instead of truth, nations rot from within. Modern social science confirms this. Studies show that societies with stronger justice systems and equality, or equity actually, have higher levels of trust, cooperation, and even economic growth. The World Happiness Report consistently ranks countries where the rule of law protects both rich and poor equally at the top of well-being indexes. On the other hand, inequality and unchecked power creates stress, violence, and division, and many other problems. Psychologists know that perceived injustice is one of the strongest triggers for anger and social unrest. And you could imagine what that leads to. So how can we live this teaching today? Defend fairness at home. Treat children equally. Don't let the stronger sibling dominate the weaker, or vice versa, maybe. Be the voice for the voiceless. Speak up when you see unfair treatment, whether at work, school, or community. And support just systems, whether through voting, volunteering, or community work. Help build structures where everyone's rights are secure. And practice courage. The hadith says, rights must be taken without hesitation. That means we must train ourselves not to be silent in front of oppression. Be robust against any injustice. Thank you for joining. May we all become voices of justice and protectors of the weak. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
You just listened to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
This is the Heart of Life pounding IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to Women of Resistance. 19-year-old Zahra Abdul Karim Mohanna had a single priority during the two-year genocide raging on them in Gaza, that is to protect her brothers and save their lives at any cost. Having lost her father, she preferred pangs of hunger than risk her brothers going to seek aid where scores of young men were targeted, disappeared, and shot. They have resisted the occupation and always will, Zahra says, but asks why they need to do that when the rest of the world is free. Here is more of Zahra.
Despite the history, occupation, and Gaza's classification as the world's largest open-air prison, by many who experienced its suffocating conditions, there was a semblance of a life. For young Palestinians like the one who shared her story with us, there was a rhythm to life, with the Israeli occupation simply the soundtrack. Building a future despite Gaza's situation was something that kept the next generation hopeful, studying, preparing, and working towards a day when there would be a different world. Israel's barbarity has replaced that with something utterly different. Life under genocide was a literal hellscape. The struggle to find something to eat outweighed by the psychological torture, in Zahra's case, of wondering if the occupation would martyr or take her brothers at any given moment. Activities once considered routine now took on an additional layer of jeopardy. Some of the sights witnessed are enough to change your very DNA, such as the tragedy playing out in real time. It's not just the obvious lack of regard for Palestinian lives. It's also the way in which Israel's genocide has changed even the landscape of Gaza. Orphans have been created, children forever scarred in an environment that is now completely alien, with all familiarity wiped from the face of the earth. Coming to terms with the new reality of Gaza has altered some things. There is no way the people, the ones who survived in any case, would not emerge unscathed. Though the one thing that has remained is the Palestinian steadfastness. It was terrifying how quickly Zahra's life, like the lives of hundreds of thousands of Palestinians, became centered on the search to satiate hungry bellies. With such scarcity, finding sustenance would consume Gazan lives. Every day, Zahra checks in on the condition of her immediate family, a literal headcount, and then begins the soul-sapping business of making it through another day. The genocide has left those who have survived it physically absolutely spent. The new truce, or the so-called ceasefire, cannot be another false dawn. Something more just and lasting is needed. Palestinians are beyond tired.
Joining me today to discuss Zahra's story is Fatima Dosa, who is a pharmacist and a political activist. Welcome, Fatima.
Thank you for inviting me. It's okay.
Yeah. Fatima, you've spent decades, you know, advocating for the rights of Palestinians. I know you've been doing so many different kind of things, you know, over the years. We have watched Palestinian women, you know, generation after generation, suffering what Zahra is talking about. She's 19 years old, but this is not something that, you know, she's born into it. Her mother was born into it. Her grandmother's gone through it. Fatima, will this ever end?
It's a very important question, Sakina. You know, you're right in saying that throughout our lifetime, you know, in my 40th decade, and that's all we've seen. It's the same conversations and it's the same stories. And the endurance of Palestinian women and what they've suffered is because of the dispossession, the displacement, the occupation, the apartheid. And it can only end when justice is done, when they're no longer living in fear. You know, they're fighting for their, what we're seeing in this genocide is they're fighting for their very existence. But I have every hope that this will end when Palestine will be free from the river to the sea. You know, as we are seeing, as the decades have gone by, their story has come more and more in the front. And we are seeing that the world has now woken up to the reality of what Palestine is, the dispossession, the occupation, and that Israel is now very much a pariah state. You know, the narrative has changed totally. And I have every hope that what we see in the liberation of Palestine, that it will not only be a dream that is whispered in the night, but it will be a lived reality for the Palestinians and for the women and the children that have gone through so much decade after decade.
Do you think it is this genocide that has created this momentum? I've said before, we've done processions for many, many, many years. But it would be, you know, when something happens, people go onto the street and then everybody forgets about it. You know, when we talk of the BDS, we boycott things for a while and then we go back into it. But do you think that has changed? Do you think the momentum in watching a live stream genocide has changed things?
You know, you're right. Again, this is the first time that we are seeing a live stream genocide and that the social media has captured this. You know, sometimes we blame social media for a lot of bad things, but actually it is social media that has opened a lot of people's eyes to the reality, because what they have seen cannot be unseen. You know, one thing that really, a phrase that caught me once when I was listening to Butcher, who was had stood up for the vice president of the Green Party in America, was that we have to move from being a moment, what happened with George Floyd was a moment, but to make it into a movement. And now what we see is a movement. You know, the outrage that we have seen is organized, that even when the ceasefire was called, the march that happened was the biggest after the ceasefire was called. People could see through that ceasefire and the superficiality of that ceasefire, and that people out on the streets throughout the globe, in every strata of society, are committed to having that free Palestine and to stand in solidarity with the Palestinians, and to make sure that their future now is not decided by the imperialists and the colonizers, but by the Palestinians themselves, including the people who have sought to have armed resistance. Because, unfortunately, this is the only way that we will see the liberation of Palestine.
Absolutely, Fatima. And I wanted to bring in the issue of the Gen Z here, you know, because we watch Zahra. Zahra is only 19 years old, but she speaks with, you know, she's grown up more than a year in these 2 years, the wisdom with which she's talking, you know, of how she first talks about all the difficulties she has faced, you know, the fear of losing her brothers. And then she says, we're not going anywhere. We're not going to make it easy for them. You know, our parents, our grandmothers have resisted, and today's women will resist. How is this playing out for the rest of the world, the Gen Z? We see huge movement among them. Are they seeking direct, you know, inspiration from women like Zahra?
Absolutely. I think from the whole of Palestinians, that you know, we can see how the women have stood up, how the children have stood up. But even the men, sometimes even the men get forgotten in these. And I think what Gen Z is seeing is in the Palestinians is a clear moral clarity. They're seeing resistance, they're seeing resilience, and they're seeing the courage to stand up to the powers that be. And it's in their steadfastness, they're seeing not only the resilience and the resistance, but that even in the worst of times and in the darkest of times, that there is hope, and that you can stand up with compassion, with conviction. And you know, that is very apparent, that the Palestinians are not desperate.
Of course, along with the fact that, you know, not only are they brave, but their faith in God. You know, it's just astounding, because when they're going through the most difficult of times, you know, you will hear Hasbunallah wa ni'mal wakeel, which is such a strong faith. But finally, Fatima, we don't have much time left, but, you know, you run decolonization sessions. I want to quickly pick on that, because we've had, you know, some of our viewers saying that you should not be using the word colonization today, because for the white people who may not be colonized, who may already be on the side of resistance and pro-Palestinian, they feel like this is attacking white people around the world. What's your view on that?
It's an interesting question. It's a perspective I have to admit that I haven't really given much thought. But when I look at the reality out there, over the last 500 years, we are seeing imperialism and we are seeing colonization. You know, the colonization of lands may have gone, like I've grown up in Africa, but the colonization of our resources, has not gone. The colonization of our minds have not gone. So it is a lived reality for many people that I feel the white people who may not be colonized and who can see through this have to understand that for majority of the world, colonization is what they are living with. And the face of that colonization is white supremacy and whiteness. So it's not something that we can just escape from. You know, we can't just say slavery didn't happen. We can't say apartheid didn't happen. It is a reality that for the people who are experiencing, it is very much a reality, and we have to understand that it is not something that we can just say.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, at least if there was no more colonization, then that's another issue.
Yeah.
But we're very much living, you know, presently with all sorts of colonized, you know, aspects in our lives. And finally, Fatima, you know, talking about home here, you know, and our responsibilities, the Tories were horrible, but the Keir Starmer's Labour has proven to be even worse. Our country has been complicit, continues to be complicit in this genocide, you know. What do we do? What is our role?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. You know, one thing that has the genocide what we've witnessed is a huge horror, but it's also very transformative, because what we've seen through that all the illusions of democracy, of rule of law, has fallen away. All the veils have gone. You know, the masks are off and the gloves are on, and it's important for us that this outrage is organized into a movement, and to make sure that the system, because you know, we come back to the fact that this is, whether it's Tories, whether it's the Labour Party, or whether it's the Liberal Democrats, it's the system that is an issue. But at the moment, we have to work in a two-pronged way. We have to work within the system to use their laws to make sure that we hold them to account, political account. So, you know, we make sure we don't vote for them, and that we have our own independent MPs. Legal accountability, that we are using international law to bring them into court, which is what, you know, a lot of organizations like Al-Haq are doing, to say that, for example, you cannot sell arms to a country that is committing genocide. So we should hold them to account. We should hold the leaders into account. And also the institutions that are like the media institutions, the NGOs.
Thank you all. We leave you with the sounds of Palestine by the artist Saif. Goodbye.
Stand.
اقرأ بسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
قد دعوتك ربي بقرآني جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسان. ودعوتك ربي بقرآني.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. May the peace and blessings of Allah be upon the soul of Prophet Muhammad and his purified progeny. Dear audience, assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another episode of the program, Let's Recite the Quran, coming to you from the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. I'm your host Mahdi, and as always, we are joined by Quran expert, dear brother Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, brother.
Assalamu alaikum, brother Mahdi. Thank you for having me, and assalamu alaikum to all the dear listeners of this program. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you, brother. Well, dear audience, as you may know, the program Let's Recite the Quran consists of several Quranic parts. First, Brother Muhammad is going to talk about the music or the musical miracle of the Noble Quran. Then, we all are going to listen to a recitation by a famous reciter of the Noble Quran. And at the end, Brother Muhammad is going to analyze that recitation from different aspects. Stay tuned. Well, today, as always, in the first part of the program, Let's Recite the Quran, Brother Muhammad will talk about the miraculous music of the Noble Quran. Brother Muhammad, let's continue our beautiful discussion.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. And in today's program, we're going to talk about different aspects of actually the miraculous music of the Quran, or we could say the musical miracle of the Holy Quran. As we said, some words, they give the impression of that meaning just by the way that we pronounce those words.
Like, إِذَا زُلْزِلَتِ الْأَرْضُ
زِلْزَلَ. That's one. There are many other examples.
The zai, which resembles
not just
vibration
that,
and earthquake.
Actually, I meant something else. The word, the way that we want to pronounce it, it has a certain kind of feeling, certain kind of, state. For example, it has a state of caution. It has a state of fear. It has a state of khushur, humility, and so on and so forth.
Without knowing the meaning, you mean?
Yeah, without knowing the meaning. Exactly. This is the point. So, one example is Surah Al-Qasas. When Prophet Moses, he wanted to defend his follower who was fighting against an Egyptian, one of the men of Pharaoh. He went to his aid. He punched him and he died.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the people of, Egypt, the bad people, the people of Pharaoh, they found out that Moses had done such a thing, and the news spread really quickly. And they were trying to find Moses so they could kill him. Okay. Because they killed, I think that person was a really important person. That's why they wanted to kill him. So, the Quran says, فَأَصْبَحَ فِي الْمَدِينَةِ خَائِفًا يَتَرَقَّبَ. The word يَتَرَقَّبَ has a kind of caution in it. When we want to pronounce يَتَرَقَّبَ, we pronounce it with caution. We pronounce it cautiously. Why? Because we have two letters of tarqiq, one letter of ra with tafkhim, and then a qaf with tashdid, with shatta and tafkhim. يترقب. We have to, you know, we have to pronounce it deliberately, with caution. Mm-hmm. And so يترقب itself means that he was, you know, he was in the city, he was wandering around in the city with caution.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he was cautious.
That's right.
Okay, so that's the meaning itself. Another thing, another aspect of the music of the Quran is that the words, they are very much in harmony with each other. The meaning of the words are harmonious.
They're connected to each other, you mean?
With one another in terms of meaning. One example is in Surah An-Najm. وَالنَّجْمِ إِذَا هَوَى مَا ضَلَّ صَاحِبُكُمْ وَمَا غَوَى وَمَا يَنْطِقُ عَنِ الْهَوَى. We could see three words, all three of them, they share two letters, waw and ya. Only the first letter is different. Actually, hawa and hawa, the first hawa and the second hawa, it's the same word, but it has two meanings. Okay, the first hawa, wa najmi idha hawa, it talks about the star that, you know, it descends. Hawa here means to descend, okay?
It's a verb, actually.
Yeah. So all of them are verbs.
Ma
dalla sahibukum wa ma ghawa. Your companion, which means the prophet, he was not misled, and he is not, you know, a person who follows his own desires, okay, or is a corrupt person, a ghawa. And وَمَا يَنْطِقُ عَنِ الْهَوَى. This time, hawa means carnal desire, to act based on your own carnal desires. وَمَا يَنْطِقُ عَنِ الْهَوَى. He does not speak something, you know,
and this hawa is
based
a noun.
On his own desire. Yeah.
This hawa is a noun, actually.
Yes, this hawa. You were right. Not all three of them are not verbs. The first one is a verb, وَنَّجْمِ إِذَا هَوَى. The second hawa, وَمَا يَنْطِقُ عَنِ الْهَوَى, is a noun, and it means carnal desire. Okay, and of course, the next verse says, إِنْ هُوَ إِلَّا وَحْيٌ يُوحَى. Whatever the Prophet says is revelation and is the truth.
Thank you, Brother Muhammad. Dear brothers and sisters in Islam, now, in the second part of the program, let's recite the Quran. We're going to listen to a recitation by Sheikh Mustafa Ismail. He's going to recite verses 16 to 21 of Surah Maryam. The audience, let's enjoy it.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. وَاذْكُرْ فِي الْكِتَابِ مَرْيَمَ إِذِ انْتَبَذَتْ مِنْ أَهْلِهَا مَكَانًا شَرْقِيًّا فَاتَّخَذَتْ مِنْ دُونِهِمْ حِجَابًا
Dear audience, you just listened to the recitation of verses 16 to 21 of Surah Maryam, recited by Sheikh Mustafa Ismail. Brother Muhammad, let's talk about this beautiful recitation.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Okay, in these verses of Surah Maryam, we have the story of Lady Mary, peace be upon her. And Mustafa Ismail, he very beautifully, he tells this story. And his tone and his intonation and the register that he uses, the maqam which he's reciting in, is very appropriate for conveying the meanings of these verses. For example, when Mary says, أَعُوذُ بِالرَّحْمَنِ مِنْكَ إِن كُنْتَ تَقِيًّا, I seek refuge from the beneficent if you are God-wary, the angel says, he reads this with جواب الجواب, قَالَ إِنَّمَا أَنَا رَسُولُ رَبِّكِ لَا لِأَهَبَ لَكِ غُلَامًا زَكِيًّا. When he reaches the part لِأَهَبَ لَكِ غُلَامًا زَكِيًّا, he brings down his voice. He wants, the angel wants to console her.
Yeah, to make her
sympathize
calm.
With her, you know, to calm her down. Yeah. Okay. لِأَهَبَ لَكِ غُلَامًا زَكِيًّا. So he goes up to the Jawab-ul-Jawab and slowly descends until the end of the verse. When Mary wants to say, how can I have a boy? How can I have a son when no human being has touched me? Again, he uses Jawab-ul-Jawab because she's frightened. She is surprised of such a thing. It seems impossible to her.
Yes.
Maybe
to show the anxiety, actually.
The anxiety, the fear, exactly. Then the angel answers her and says that this is what your God has desired, and it will definitely happen. And he's going to be a sign for the mankind. He's going to be a sign for mankind, and also mercy from us, mercy from God. Anyway, so now let's talk about the tajweed.
Good idea, brother.
In the first few verses, we have a lot of ras with sukoon, preceded by fatha.
So all of them
have tafkhim.
Yes.
Now, other than the tafkhim, which means we have to pronounce these ras with thickness.
That's right.
Is the fact that ra should be pronounced without qalqala, and with tawassut. So,
compared to the plosives and weak fricatives, yeah, actually.
Sheikh Mustafa Ismail, he pronounces all of them correctly. Wadh kuru maruyam. He doesn't say Maryam. Maryam. Fa'arsalna ilayha. Okay?
Yeah, the timing should be in between letters of plosive letters and weak fricatives, yes, actually.
وذكر في الكتاب Maryam إذ انتبذت من أهلها مكانا شرقية. Again, شرقية. Another issue is we have a lot of ikhfaz. قالت إني أعوذ بالرحمن منك. We have a nun sakina followed by the letter kaf.
Minka becomes minka.
Now, there are two ways that we can apply ikhfa here. We could either apply it in the original way, which is approximating the place of articulation of the letter after the nun sakina, which is kaf. Or we could actually place the tongue in the place of articulation of kaf. Both are acceptable. In fact, the second way of doing it is a lot easier.
Yes.
The way that Mustafa Ismail, he does the ikhfa. Minka. Instead of saying minka, he says minka. Both are correct.
In case we have kaf and qaf.
And qaf, exactly. In kunta. Kunta. Again, we have ikhfa, but this time you have to approximate the ta.
Mm-hmm.
You're not allowed to place the tongue in the place of articulation of ta.
Okay.
Another important thing is whenever ya is mushaddad. Whenever ya is mushaddad by itself and it is not the result of idgham of nun sakina,
uh-huh.
You have to make sure that the ya is not pronounced with too much intensity.
And without ghunna, actually.
Without
ghunna,
exactly. So if you say, قال كذلك قال ربك هو علي هين. Is that correct?
No.
علي هين.
That is too tense, I think.
Yeah. We don't need this much intensity. قال كذلك قال ربك هو علي هين.
It should be soft.
Yes, it should be soft, just like the way that Sheikh Mustafa Ismail reads the ya with tashdeed.
Thank you, Brother Muhammad, and thank you, dear audience of IRIB English Radio. That was the final part of the program, Let's Recite the Quran. If you have any comments, questions, or suggestions, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. And don't forget to visit our website, that is parstoday.com. Please click on the tab Call of Islam, and there you can listen to this program as well as other programs of this radio. Until next time, we'll leave you in Allah's care. Have a nice time and goodbye.
آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتي.